This episode is brought to you by CEP Compression Australia. CEP Compression brings the user more energy, greater endurance, and enhanced performance during activities. For a discount at CEP, use the following code online, local legends in running. Welcome to the Local Legends in Running podcast, where you hear the stories from local legends in the Australian running community you've simply always wanted to hear. Today, season 3, episode 67, I chat with Brisbane runner, Matty Cooper. I've run with Matty with the Burt Squad in Brisbane for a couple of years now, but the man's been around since around 2010 on the Brisbane running scene. As you can imagine, in the last sort of 15 years, he has run a lot of events. We're talking around 22 marathons the man has run, Matty, and just so many stories that go along with it. I've learned so much through this conversation. I'm hoping the listeners can, particularly around that marathon event, but just also how Matty juggles his running with three daughters and a full-time teaching job. And as Matty puts it, the teaching comes third, it's family and running. And teaching there full-time as a primary school teacher and how he manages to perform at such a high level for his age at 44 now is remarkable. As mentioned, I hope you enjoy his insights and stories, and thank you for tuning in to the Local Legends in Running podcast. Welcome, Matty Cooper, to the Local Legends in Running podcast.
Thanks for having me, mate. Local Legends sounds a bit funny, but I'll take it.
You definitely are, mate. You've been around for a long time. I've known you for probably a couple of years and known of you for even longer. It just seems like you've been around forever. And I wanted to start actually with your run this morning. I saw you in these new mystery Mizuno shoes. Ooh. What are they all about?
Well, they're a mystery shoe, so I can't say too much. But, look, I saw them floating around. I saw them on social media from one other guy called Dave the Runner, and I'd also seen Croaks from Inside Running podcast. And so I've been with Mizuno for, like, almost 15 years now, just been ambassador on the side doing my bit. So I sent a message out to Tristan, and I just said, look, on the slim chance, you know, could I possibly grab a pair just to have a run in, spread the word, do the odd bit of social media stuff? Fully expecting a no, mate, you're way too down the pecking order for that, which would have been fine. But I was surprised to get a like congratulations on your win last weekend. And mate, I'll see what I can do. And they rocked up 3 days later. So I've just been wearing them. I wore them for 30 minutes on Friday. I've been battling a real dodgy Achilles post GC. So it's hard to get a gauge on a shoe. But in that 30 minutes, they felt good. But I did 90 minutes with the group this morning, seeing how they go over that. And they were just beautiful. And in fact, my Achilles didn't hurt at all. So they're really soft. I know shoes hate being compared to other brands, but I suppose you'd say it's in the Nova Blast kind of territory, like just really soft, really comfy out of the box straight away. No plates, so none of that toe off that you get from some of the other ones, but just a really comfy shoe. So I don't know what it's called. Well, I'm not allowed to say what it's called or when it's launched, but I'm pretty sure it'll be like early Jan, and it'll probably sit in people's, like that really comfy daily trainer kind of spot in your rotation. Really, really nice shoe.
Perfect, Matty. Sounds very good. And let's talk about this win. Hey, you mentioned GC50 or GC at least Gold Coast 50. And it's been around for a while now. I guess a newish event in the massive scheme of things, as you'd probably know, but pretty reputable now. It's notorious for all its heat, a lot of concrete. I think they've changed that a little bit to be on the roads. But yeah, you're there last weekend and interesting story. Got the win, but plenty of commotion out there. Happy to run us through what occurred.
Yeah, man. Look, I've been going down the GC50 for probably 8 years, I reckon, or maybe even close to 10. I went down there when it was called Curra to Jarambah, and you used to like start right up at Curra Surf Club, and you ran 25Ks one way. You went up over Greenmount, I think it's called. You dropped down right down to the car park at D Bar. Then you turned around and came back up out of the car park at D Bar and ran the whole 25Ks back. And I remember running, like leaving Coolangatta and just looking ahead and just seeing like, surfers in the distance on the coastline going, crap, I've got to get all the way back there. So I did that back in probably, I would guess like 2015 or 16 or something, like a long time ago. And I finished second there and it was like 3 hours 25. I went back again. I've done the 30, I've done the 15. But since it's moved, like you said, since it's moved to Coolangatta and become a 2 lap course and been rebranded as GC50, it is really big now. And I've had some bad runs down there. Runs that haven't gone to plan at all. And when it doesn't go to plan in 50K in the heat, it really doesn't go to plan. But last year I snagged third behind Kyle Weiss and a mate of mine, Dean Edmonds. And so I decided to go back down, maybe for the last time. But it was only 4 weeks post Taipei and I wasn't real confident I'd run well. But we settled into a pack and Ben McCronin went off the front and he was going for a 3 hour run to try and get a qualifier for Comrades. And about 5K in Tom Brimlow dropped us, and it was a pack of about five of us. And everything went to plan for me like perfectly for the first lap. Like I went through 25K and still felt like completely controlled, didn't feel hot. And it was at the 25K turn coming back that I noticed that Ben McCronin was suddenly 2 minutes behind the pack that I was in. And I saw my mate Kyle on the side of the road, and I was like, what happened to Ben? And he was like, I don't know. I was like, well, that's interesting. But I thought, well, Ben being 2 minutes behind, maybe he had a toilet stop, maybe something went wrong. But knowing Ben's form, I thought he'll easily run us all down anyway. So I'm not going to get happy that he's behind me anyway. And then a guy in front of me that was inside, so I'm like, oh, I'm in fourth now. And then fourth became third. And I was like, well, this is good. Like, I didn't expect a podium here. And then I passed the guy in second, which just left Tom Brimlow up front. And he was in sight, but it was always about 90 seconds, 2 minutes, beach par. Anyway, long story short, everything went really well with 38K. Then, as you might know, I have stomach issues quite regularly. I have Crohn's disease and have for a long time, and it does have a significant effect on my running. So I had to make a quick nature break. And when I came out of the nature break, I yelled out to an official like, "What place am I in?" And the guy looked at me like one of those time travel movies when the person rocks up and says, "What year is it? What date is it?" Like, clearly you must know you're in second. So he said, "You're in second." I'm like, "Oh, cool." The pack that was behind me didn't make up time in the loo. So I kept on going. And look, the last 6K got hard. GC50 is synonymous with like a 44K bonk for me. Like the last 6K, it's hot. The last 6K is on Cyborg. There's dudes crossing with their surfboards. And you're never in a race with anybody. You're always just like by yourself in that last 5K, just trying to get the finish line. So when I crossed the line, a tiny bit slower than I wanted, but 3 hours 16, I was like stoked with second. Took about 30 seconds after I finished for some old guy that I didn't even know come up, go, "Oh, did you hear what happened to the guy in first?" And I was like, "No." And he's like, "Oh, he got carried across the line. Like, you might be the winner." And I was like, "Oh, okay, right." But meanwhile, I'm completely like heat stroked. So I'm like, "Cool, whatever." And then Kyle, yeah, my mate Kyle came and found me and he ran me more through what had happened. So long story short, Tom was dominating us all. He was a good 4 minutes ahead of me by the time he made it to the finishing chute. But I know he won't mind me saying because I've been talking to him and he's done a pod already. But yeah, he made the finishing shoot. He hit the green grass and he hit the deck. So according to his words, like he hit the deck once and then he got himself back up. But he said it's like his brain couldn't tell his legs what to do. And he went down again. And I feel bad because people grabbed him, side spectators from the side, other runners. They grabbed him and dragged him across the line. And look, there's plenty to say whether or not if he'd been left alone, whether he could have like he could have. He had 4 minutes. You can crawl 80 meters in 4 minutes. Like he could have crawled and still made it. But I think most people were more worried about his like safety and his health. And like when you see someone collapse, I suppose people's natural instinct is to get in and drag him to the line. So he got dragged across. I didn't think too much about it because in my head he'd still won. But GC50 is now under the banner of like Ultra Running Australia Aura because it's the national champs. And after about an hour of communication, I was informed that, yeah, he had to be DQ'd due to outside assistance, which bumped everybody up one spot. So I went to first, Eddie went to second, and Tom, not Tom, Ben McCronin, who had stayed out there and kept on doing his thing, had finished fourth. He got bumped up to third. So I ended up walking away as a national champion, which I didn't think would be a phrase that would ever describe me. And while I still don't think it really does, hey, the records say it does, and I've got the medal and I've got the trophy. So my kids think I'm a national champion, and my class at school think I'm a national champion. So hey, might as well be one. If it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, then I'll be a duck.
Well, and we'll get to that. Maddie is a teacher like myself. But mate, the results aside, what actually draws you to that event? Is it like you've done a lot of marathons? Is it literally just the fact that it is an ultra event, which is pretty much 50K and over? Like it is a very hot and a warm time of the year, and I don't want to take anything away from the event, but like, would you prefer to be running that in a different climate as well?
I suppose
Part
growing
of the
up,
battle, though,
would you
isn't
ask?
it?
Yeah, would you ask all those Ironmen, would they rather do their triathlon in Hawaii or would they rather do it somewhere cooler? Like the Hawaiian Ironman was and kind of is still the pinnacle of world triathlon because it's an Ironman, but it's an Ironman with all that adversity of the heat. And for me, GC50 is about that. It's not about running 50K. It's about the heat. It's also about, like I said, that last 6K, the loneliness. Like you are running, it's nothing compared to like Gold Coast Marathon when you've got a pack of 20 around you and you're running along with people. I'm not the fastest guy around at all, and we'll probably get into that later when we talk. But I haven't got a speed luxury, so for me, the harder it is and the more it comes to mental strength, standing like I'm putting myself at a pedestal. But when it comes more mental, less physical, I'm more of a shot at doing well at something. So for me, that race has probably, if you added up all my performances I've ever had, I've probably got more. I've got 2 seconds there. I've got a fourth. I've got a third. I've got a win. Like for those, that probably stacks up better in my career, as you say, by the end of it, than any other race because it's just brutal. And I tend to like the heat generally. I don't mind it as much as other people, so it doesn't affect me as much as other people do find it hard. But for me, yeah, I don't know if I'll be back. Like it seems like a pretty good John Farnham style swan song. But we'll see. I might get FOMO again and be like, nah, I want to get down there and do it, and then regret it at 30K like you do every time you get down there. So,
Congratulations, Maddie, and what a title to have moving forward. I love
yep.
how, as a teacher, you were putting it out there to the kids. But let's move along
They
to,
love it.
you would have been privy to Andy Buchanan's Australian marathon record just
Oh,
the other
yeah.
week in Valencia.
Oh,
Wasn't
Dan.
it a great event? Like such a fast event, it's getting faster and faster. It's just so well renowned now for fast times. 206.22 was Andy, surpassed Brett Robinson, who's had that record now for 2 years. I think it was Fukuoka, actually. He recorded 207.31. And Andy's had an interesting run, hasn't he, the last couple of years? Like he was on this very podcast months ago before Paris, and we had a conversation about him breaking his personal PB and running a time that was just not quick enough to make Paris. And so
High 208, I think. Yeah, high
then a
208 he was.
yeah, that's right. Then a turn of events where Brett Robinson was taken out of that event, unfortunately, and replaced by Andy. And what a run he had there. But to debut it to, I think it was around 2:12 or 13 from memory, Andy's first marathon. It must be no more than five he's run. And now at 206.22, he's come leaps and bounds, hey.
I think he's run four. I think he's run Hamburg twice.
Home
He's run
games.
Paris Olympics. No, I don't think he did Com Games. I don't think so. He's done the Com Game. I think he did a Commonwealth Games half champs, but I don't think he did the Com. He might have, but yeah, come a long way. Like when you think about 2:12 debut, 2:08, everyone celebrated that this year when it was like, another Aussie under 2:10, and he was like ninth fastest Aussie, and then he just goes out and pulls that out of the hat at Valencia. It's just so cool. Like I respect all the runners in the Australian distance community, but Andy's just seems to be cut from a different mold. He's not that MTC pro Nike athlete that lives and breathes running. Like he works 3 days a week. He's from a little town, Bendigo.
Teacher.
Teacher, exactly right. So hey, there's hope for all of us. Yeah, he just seems to come, just seems to be a different type of athlete. And he's done it the different way. Like he's come up through AV cross country. He's
Yes,
been running
yeah.
forever. He's been running forever. But just kind of chipped away, didn't flash around, hasn't gone sub 60 for a half or anything like that. But obviously shows that, I suppose it shows that consistency is the key. Like just being out there and not giving up and just being dedicated. And obviously a shit ton of talent doesn't go far Australia that does it. So
No, that's right. I heard him on Inside Running podcast actually saying that potentially he had a little bit more in the tank, which is exciting. And
I know.
we got to think of what Brett Robinson's thinking now after having that title for a few years, and potentially now considering a run like Valencia and others. Izzy Batdoyle too. We can't forget her, third fastest lady as well in Valencia. So it must be an alluring concept for many runners out there, not just those elites, but those recreational
That
guys
one,
too, like
yeah, we
yourself
know
and I and
Narissa
others
went
out
over there,
there.
don't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we know Narissa went over, a friend of ours went over there and ran it. And there was so, like, it's yeah, tracking. I mean, if you can get an entry, it's going to be getting harder and harder, but if you can get in there, but that being said, like, if you listen to Inside Running podcast, you'd also know they say that it might be fast, it might be Valencia, but it's still 42 Ks. And while Andy and that had great runs, there were some people we would know at Valencia that had shockers that day, like Brad Depatafelt, like, amazing triathlete in the past. He had a hammies problem. If you listen to Inside Running podcast, there were two guys that had their own spin-off show and they both, one DNF'd and one didn't get their time. So I suppose you can be drawn to the fast ones and they've probably got the potential to have that amazing run, but you've still yourself got to run 42K. And it can still go wrong, can't it? And
Exactly.
I'd hate to fly the other side of the world and have that pressure. I'd hate
Well,
to,
yeah.
yeah, I reckon I'd go worse. I reckon I'd go worse because, man, if I don't do this, I've left my family at home, I paid this much money. If this doesn't go to plan, whereas you travel around Australia, if it goes wrong, well, it's a bit of a pain in the butt. But I don't know if I could justify the sacrifice in my own life. I reckon it'd get into my head too much.
Yeah, so what, 5 years away from now, mate, or even 3 years? What is the time and who's got it? Will that stand for a while, do you think, or will it be lowered?
I reckon it'd be lowered by him first.
Yeah, agreed.
Look, Brett. Yeah, I'm not an expert, but Brett's obviously got the speed. Like Brett's a much faster half marathoner. Brett's probably got the ability to do it. And we would say he did until like 2 weeks ago with 207. But as I said, like 207's good, but it's still not world stage. Like 206, like there's not many non-Africans that run that fast. I'm a massive sucker for Jack Rayner. Like I think he's got like
Oh, yeah.
massive untapped potential. But again, in the past, his body hasn't handled it. So Andy's doing something that says, hey, look, I'm not as fast as you guys. I don't have the 10K PB you guys have got, but I've done it over 42. Just being faster than me on the track doesn't mean you're going to go faster in the marathon, does it? And look at
No.
Timmy Vincent. I mean, that Timmy Vincent could show them all up in 2 years. So, or
Yeah.
there'll be someone we don't even know yet. There's probably a
No,
name out there we
no.
haven't even really known yet that might, I mean, what is it? Rising water. I don't know the saying. Rising tide lifts all boats or whatever the hell the saying is. Like once one person does it, like look at what Australian women marathoning, like Sinead did that. No girls are running 2:23 when Sinead ran 2:21, and now they're all running 2:23. So just brings them all up to a new level, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Before we talk too much about that marathon, we could go on forever. Let's talk about you, Matt. We're here for you this afternoon. And let's hear about you as a person first, because what I know of you is obviously in the teaching realm. And you've got three kids, don't you, as well? And all girls? Is
Do.
that
Three
correct?
daughters, yes.
Three
Three daughters
daughters.
keep me
So,
very busy.
all right, let's hear about this then. Like how life is around the daughters and the dad life and family life and teaching. What else do you do to buy time, and anything else you can fill us in on about Matty Cooper?
Time wise, I don't think there's anything left. I think my Instagram bio is like father, husband, runner. And I mean, I don't even put teacher in there. As much as I love teaching, I do consider it probably a means to an end. I wouldn't do anything else. I love it. And maybe 5 years ago, I was career driven to work in like management space, deputy kind of stuff like that. But I've had a full 180 in my life and just go teaching is something that I enjoy that goes 8:30 to 3:30. And I don't want anything that would take any more time than that. So the rest of my life, yeah, really. It does involve around running. Like I'm not saying I put running first, but I suppose if we're looking at a week, and how I'm planning it. My wife also exercises every day. She really enjoys the endorphin kick of exercise. She's I wouldn't say she's an ex-runner because that'd be a negative thing, but she doesn't run as much as she did pre-kids. But we did meet through running, my wife and I. We did meet running together. She did her first marathon before I did mine, actually. But three babies kind of really do make a change. So we pretty much work our life around one of us is exercising in the morning and one of us is exercising in the afternoon. So we lock in who's got the morning and who's got the arvo. Then we work that in around when the girls have got gymnastics or when they've got touch footy or when they've got guitar lessons or art lessons. And then by the time you do that and put work in it and sleeping and eating in it, there's really not a whole lot of time left. My drive to work is probably my 30 minutes where I get to listen to music or listen to a podcast and have like 30 minutes of time to not do one of those things. Even the weekends, you're factoring in running around the girls and their parties and their life. And then winter comes and I try and fit the footy in to watch the AFL. And then, I mean, that's pretty much life, I suppose.
All right,
Not that
podcast
exciting, mate.
wise, what do you listen to podcast
Podcast wise,
wise or music? Give us a bit of taste. Inside
podcast
running
wise,
guy.
massive, massive inside running guy, massive inside running nerd. That really, I'd almost contribute them to like turning my like perspective on running around. There's
Yeah,
two big things that
100%.
happened in my life that turned running around. It was joining Bert and listening to those guys. I think before Bert, before inside running, I knew nothing about running and what I was doing. I was just doing what
Yeah,
I was
and they
doing.
came at a similar time, didn't they? But
They did.
2016, it must have been what, 2017, 18 for inside running?
Yeah. I think I came in inside running and they were probably about 50 episodes in. So probably a year in, I stumbled across them. I don't even know how I found out about them actually. But you hear them talking about running and you're constantly like stealing ideas about like their workouts and their different philosophies. So you're stealing that and then you're mixing with people at Burt that like I look up to that have got ideas and then blending all that together. Yeah, that's probably where my running started to turn around. And geez, I wish it had happened 10 years earlier. Like I'm bloody old now. But it didn't. And hey, it happened when it happened. So yeah, that was probably the turning point, really. I don't know if that's answering the question we had now, but
Yeah, I was going to
yeah.
ask you, Brad Croker. I know you're a fan of him. Is he a similar age to you?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. 44, I think. Yeah, I turned 44 in January, so
Wow, he
I'm
must be an
officially
inspiration.
on the wrong side of 40. Look, he is an inspiration, but like I draw more inspiration from the people I know. And I know the guys might listen to this and might not, but like as far as I look at to who inspires me, it's the guys in that age bracket that I run with daily or weekly or monthly. So guys like Peter Bracken or Derek Lay, Andy Day, they're the guys that I look up to. And they might not be as fast as Croker, but I know the work they do and I know them as people. And there's always that kind of thing that says, well, it's not impossible to do it if they're doing it. So, and then, yeah, watching their results that are usually better than mine, just that, one or two caliber above, that's probably what keeps me still, rocking up to GC Marathon next year at 44 and still having that hope or belief that there's still a PB left in me is because guys around me are the same age as still doing it and still dreaming it. So I shouldn't hang my shoes up just yet. Soon, but not yet.
Yeah, well, it's an amazing thing, Bert, isn't it? We could probably tie in your running PBs to how much it's potentially improved you. And they do have a knack for having almost all ages there. Hey, someone as quick as Rob Gaudino, who the other week broke the under 55 mile record. I'm forgetting his time that he ran, 4:30 something. Am I correct in saying that, or quicker?
I think it was quicker. I think it was quicker. Like, I don't
Roundabouts.
know it. I know it's quicker than I could run a mile in. So,
And all the way down to kids who sometimes, a bit like Matt Hansen, joining as early as high school, moving into just out. And then also guys like Matt Hansen and Kai Loth now attending or about to head over to America. So that's happened.
And
Adam Fogg,
Foggy
we can't
started
forget
it.
him. He's and now a UK man as well, and running what, the 3:34 something 1500. So it's got such a great breadth, the group. But before we get into that at all, or if you want to sort of tie it into your running PBs, let's run through like your 5K up to your marathon. And if you can give us any kind of stories, we love the stories around each of those PBs, where they were, any sort of good race-offs between competitors out there in the Brisbane or Australian running community, we'd love to hear it.
Go for it. I tried to get out my training diaries before we hooked up online because my running is just such a blur. All I do know is that like the first training diary I found from being up here was 2009. So I think that's when I kind of got back into running. And like nothing in that era is kind of PB worthy. I don't have years for most of them. I know my 5K BB is a very embarrassing 16:15. And I get a lot of grief about that from all the guys at Burt because it is nowhere near the same as the rest that match up to it. I couldn't tell you the year, but it is a couple of years old, like maybe 5 years old. I have since then run a 16:19 and a 16:18 at Brisbane Roadrunners. So come close again, but that sub 16 is still eluding me. So that one's there to wait. 10K PB is like 33:42. I remember that one. I know that's from the Gold Coast 10K, but again, I wouldn't be able to tell you the year, but I'd be guessing like 2017, 2018, something along those lines. The other ones are more fresh in my memory. Gold Coast Marathon in 2022 is my marathon PB, and that's 2:33:03. Just one of those races that I haven't been able to reproduce again. And the half was the same year, a couple of weeks later up at Sunny Coast. And that was the day that I swore I'd never run a half marathon ever again. So I think I ran one, oh, I don't know what it was now. It's either 111 low or 112 low. And I actually can't
Wow,
remember which one it
that's
is. I think it's 112
crazy.
low. I think it's 112.10. And that was a day where I've done lots of halves, but I'd never ever raced a half from like start to finish. Like usually when I've done halves, there's been times where you like back off, run it more like a marathon, you know, hit 13, save yourself for a few minutes or a few Ks and finish strong. And I was in the pack with I think third and fourth female. And they were just hitting this like consistent, you like monotone pace, just like K after K. And I was like struggling from about 10K. And I just kept saying to myself, all right, run with them till 11 and then you can drop off. And I get to 11K and I'd still feel as bad, but didn't feel any worse. And I'm like, okay, I'll run to 12K. And I got to 12K with them. I'm like, okay, I'll get to 13. And I ran the whole way with them till like 19 and a half, 20K. And then I dropped the girls in the last K, I think, and got across the line in front of them. And I was running with this guy in the marathon. Well, actually, I should say I was running with this guy in the pack, and it wasn't until we got into the finish line and I hung left to go through the finish chute that I realized the bugger was doing the marathon. And it was Rob Collins, who I know now.
Yeah,
So he
distance
went on to
culture.
win the marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah, he went on to win the marathon, and I was just like, oh my God! Like I was hammer and tongs, hanging on, wanting to give up, and I was doing a half, and this bloke was doing that was his marathon, and that was kind of both exciting that I ran like a minute 45 PB or something, and I'd never been in the one. I'd never been the 113s before, let alone the 112. So I jumped from like 114.10 at a Roadrunners or something to like
Wow.
112.10. So I knocked like, yeah, 2 minutes off. So that was like stoked that I was a 72-minute runner now, but at the same time going, and that guy's halfway through his run and he's going to keep going. And Rob Collins is a legend and he's a good runner, but he's not even like, yeah, he's not. Imagine like, I mean, I call myself sub elite, but even someone like in that sub elite is still so far away from the Andy Buchanans and stuff of the world. Like,
Exactly. What
it's
time did he run
insane.
in the end? Do you recall what he'd run?
I think he ran like 225 or something like that, 225,
Yeah.
226 from memory, something
Yep.
along those lines. I know Sunny Coast is usually one somewhere between like 225 and 229. Like, that's the usual kind of, you know, they don't get sub 220 runners very often. So it's usually like mid 225s. I think he was the same.
Yeah, well, let's not talk about numbers though, not so away from times. Like, how many, for example, half marathons or marathons have you run?
Marathons, I can tell you. I had to look it up the other day for Atlas Events. So I think I've done 22 marathons.
Wow.
That's not including the 50s that you chuck on top, I suppose. So chuck in the GC 50s, and I've probably done like 26 or 27. But halves, I don't know. Like I've only got a few halves I can remember. There was the one I just spoke about, and then the following year in 2023, I did the Gold Coast half, my first one ever. I'd never done the Gold Coast marathon, half marathon before. I'd only done the tens and the marathons. I did that in like 1:13:03 or something. So I made it off my PB, but it's still my second fastest time, which I was happy with because I went in with a real dodgy injured hamstring and I was just happy to get through it. I've done so many halves at like Roadrunners. I've done jetty to jetties. I've done park to parks, but I don't know how many. Like I wouldn't be surprised if I've done less halves than marathons, to be honest, because it just doesn't entice me. Like some people say the half marathon is like the best distance because you can run it fast. You know, it's not a marathon, so it's easier, but I'd prefer to either do like a really hard, fast 10K or do a mental game strategic marathon, the half just falls in a very awkward spot in between for me. And I've just never really, apart from that one Sunny Coast one, never really nailed it. And I know now to nail a half hurts like hell, so I don't really want to do it again.
Yeah, this might tie nicely into sort of your running story, Matt, like where it all started for you. And I just want to hear like the range, excuse me, of the marathons, like how much you've improved in that. Because you've certainly been consistent, at least in the last sort of 5, 6 years with the marathons. But where your first marathon was and what time and what led you to get there. Because there's some point in every runner's journey, I guess for guys or girls like you and I, that you really decide that you want to prioritize and get better and better at running, as opposed to just getting out there and going for, a 5K jog, like which is okay, but it's a bit different when you're trying to be as fast as you can. Hey, so yeah, how did it all start for you as early as a child?
As early as a child, wasn't much of a runner as a kid. I was one of those kids that tried every sport and sucked at all of them. So had my turn at basketball, no good at that. Had my turn at cricket, no good at that. AFL, no good at that. I was just kind of a, I don't know, I was just a bit of a nothing kid as far as sport came. In high school, I kind of, long story short, I suppose, which is kind of interesting if that's what you're after, stories and stuff. I went to a high school and I probably in grade seven got in to the wrong crowd. I was a very lost kid and I didn't really know where I fit in. And I ended up trying to fit in with the wrong kids. We're talking like smoking and drinking and even like worse stuff, I suppose, without going into too much details, but doing stuff in grade seven on school campus that you shouldn't be doing. My PE teacher at the time, I'd done cross country at school and I'd done okay. He's pretty much the reason I became a teacher too. He called my mum in and he said, Matt's going down the wrong path. He needs a hobby. He needs an outlet. He needs something to do. He was a local triathlon coach and he offered my mum, because I'm a single mum with not a great deal of money. He offered to coach me for free. He offered to like take me from school to swim training every afternoon and my mum would pick me up from the pool. I tried to organize a bike through my local church, which I did. And I got into triathlon pretty much to like turn my life around. And the longest story short is the fact that that man is actually Alexandra Blake from Burt, who's now Alexandra like Rudolph, I think it is. It's her dad.
Oh,
So when
what?
Alex came
Really?
to
Wow.
Burt, I was like, oh my God, like you're Alex. Like I knew you when you were like 5 years old.
No
And yeah,
way.
her dad pretty much, yeah, got me into sport, got me interested in something that I could throw energy into. And so from that point, yeah, I became a triathlete. So triathlon was where it all started. I did cross country running in Tassie. I was never very good. I made two state teams only because those comps were in Tassie. And because we were the home state, we got to send like 12 kids instead of eight or something. So I made the reserve B grade run. But I dabbled in triathlon and I did all right considering I made a few nationals and stuff like that. But it was due to the fact that triathlon was very much a new sport in Tassie. And four kids got to make the team, and there might have been like 12 kids in the state doing the triathlon. So it wasn't anything fancy. But I dabbled at that. I had to go at track and field. I had illusions of doing something great in track because running was always my strength in triathlon. I swam well. I rowed terribly and lost all my places that I got out of the swim, and then I caught most of them back on the run. So it wasn't pretty. So I got to track and ran some pretty average times as a 17-year-old, 18-year-old. Like, I think I almost cracked 2 minutes for the eight. I think I ran like 2:30, like less than 2:01, but not less than two. I think I ran like a 4:09, 1500. I ran like a 9:03, 3K, and never quite cracked that 9 minute mark. So I was okay. And I did all right in like, the local comps, but never made any kind of state team. And then I moved to Queensland. Like, my partner and I at the time finished uni. Moved to Queensland. I'd since fallen out of sport and I kind of gone into phase two of my life, which was like partying and enjoying life and not really running anymore. And I moved up to Queensland and it kind of dawned on me that like I'm in Queensland now and like Noosa Triathlon and Moranbah Triathlon and these races that I grew up watching on TV are now like literally on my doorstep. So I took that as a chance to get the bike back out and get back in the pool and did triathlons for a while, but realized that I'd left triathlons because I'm no good at it. And so I went to a Bridge to Brisbane training run in 2009, I think it was, with keen to do the Bridge to Brisbane and kind of get back into running and some fun runs. And Bridge to Brisbane training group ended up becoming a squad called BRS, Brisbane Run Squad. So I joined Brisbane Run Squad in 2009 and ran with them for like 5, 10 years, ran with them for 10 years, ended up becoming one of their coaches, and joining BRS probably got me back into running and seeing it as something that needed some structure and routine. But I look back to my training diaries and I thought structure and routine was like 50 Ks a week. It's quite hilarious. Like I didn't know what I was doing. I'd still swim once, I'd ride once, I'd do a couple of 30-minute runs. I think my first marathon I trained for running like no more than 60 Ks a week. And I thought that was fine because, hey, I used to run 30 Ks a week being a triathlete. Now I'm doing double that. So I debuted at the Brisbane Marathon in 2009 or 2010. Yeah, so 2010, I think I mentioned earlier, my wife was a runner pre-kids, and she decided she wanted to do the Gold Coast Marathon. And I was at that stage, like marathons weren't for me. I'd even been told when I was younger, when I got diagnosed with Crohn's disease, that I'd never be able to run a marathon. Like I was told it would be bad for me, and I still had that in the back of my head. Well, my wife started doing the long runs and started training for it, and I started like kind of getting jealous of how the long runs and what they were doing together. So I decided that I'd do a marathon too, but I didn't want to jump in on her glory and do Gold Coast as well. So I entered Brisbane Marathon for that year, and the whole goal was to run sub 3 hours. And I ran 3 hours, 1 and 47 seconds, which I was bummed about. But it was still like everyone around me thought it was amazing, and it just shows how much Brisbane running has changed. Is the fact that that got me 11th place overall with a 301. Imagine now, like you run 301 and you finish 11th. So Brisbane running in Brisbane has changed like so much since I started. Like you said, I've been on the fun run scene, the charity run scene since like 2010, and I had some really good years. But I look back now and like back in the day, you rock up to a charity or a fun run in Brizzy and run 35 minutes, 36 minutes for 10K, and you podium. And now, if you went there and burp, you can't go to a burp session now and run that podium. So running's, I mean, I suppose it's a part of the bigger picture with running in general. But yeah, I did 3:01 there, and then look, I pretty much did a marathon every year following. I went to the Cadbury Marathon in Hobart the next year, I think, and I ran 2:57, and I was just stoked that I got under 3 hours. I've done lots of Gold Coasts. I've been to Canberra, and I think I did that in like 2:52. My times just slowly kind of went down like 3 or 4 minutes each year. And sometimes I get like a 2:51, and then I do a second marathon that year, and that'd be a 2:56. And I just hovered in those 2:50s. I think in like 2016, 2017, I did Gold Coast and got down to like 2:41, 2:42. And I was really happy with that. Like, you know, that's 20 minutes off my time. And at that stage, like running low 2:40s was good. And I remember missing Gold Coast Marathon 1 year because we'd had a bub. I think it was our second baby. We'd had Emmy in 2015. So I'd run 2016, I think, and run 2:41. And I went down 2:17 and watched. I think I must have done the 10K that year on my PB. I remember being on the sideline watching the marathon and watching guys like Peter Bracken and Daryl Hill and these guys that I knew, and they all went under 2:40. And I was just standing there going, I say, so 2:41's not good anymore. Now you need to be like sub 2:40 for it to count. So then I had to like reassess my goals, and then sub 2:40 became the goal. And I had a couple of cracks at it, and I still ran like 2:41s and 2:42s. And it wasn't until the Noosa Runaway Bay Noosa Marathon in 2019 that I finally ran 2:39, like 57 or something. And I finally got under that 2:40 mark. I remember running with who was up there? I was running with Yuen Phua. There was someone else in the pack with us. Dan James was running in that race as well. I can't remember who was with you, and there was three of us, and I knew us all. Can't remember who it was. We're all Burt guys. I remember the commentator saying, like, I was just looking at a Burt training run. But yeah, got under that. And then that was like, good, I'm in the 2:30 pack. And then before I knew it, suddenly 2:39 wasn't any good. And like, you know, Peter and Derek are running like 2:31. So it's like, oh, the bar keeps moving. So it's pretty good to look back on it. Like now, this year, I ran like 3 marathons in Australia this year and one in Taipei. And I can't count Taipei because it was just like the most horrendous humid conditions I've ever seen. But like now that I did, I think I did a 2:38 this year, a 2:37 and a 2:36. And while they're not PB material, like the fact that now I can run consistently in those high 2:30s, where once upon a time, you know, the goal was just to get under 2:40 to like be in that group. And that was 5 years ago now. So I suppose 5 years, you know, has gone by, and I'm still running quicker than I did then. It shows that there might still be a bit of fight in the old dog left. So
Yeah, let's get to the training as we talk about the racing, because you do race a
Yeah.
lot, Maddie. You know, you just mentioned three marathons this year. It's on the higher end for some people. I'm sure that, well, we know there's people out there that run more than that, but you know, your road runners, events, park runs, your 10Ks, 5Ks, whatever that may be, you do
Yeah.
race a lot. So how does training look for you? Because I look at your Strava the last sort of back in
Don't look at
September.
the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. It's pretty low from like
Yeah, don't
October.
look
That
at
must
that.
have been timed pretty well for Taipei.
Post-Gympsy.
150K back in September.
Yeah.
And yeah, what
That's a that's
last week? 23K after Gold
that's
Coast.
only happened once. That's only happened once. Yeah, when I realized I was it's a long story short, I suppose. I did Brisbane as a training run this year, and the goal was just to get a long run, a solid long run in the legs, because my whole goal this year was building around going up to Cairns and doing the Cairns Marathon. I hadn't done it before. I'm an Atlas ambassador. I work like in the Atlas Collective for the guys that run like Hobart, Cairns, Brizzy, and Sunny Coast. And I'd done Hobart a couple of years ago. I'd done Sunny Coast a bunch of times, and I'd done Brizzy like a bunch of times, but I hadn't done Cairns. So I thought, all right, I'm going to do Cairns. I'll do Brizzy as like a lead-in run, and then I'll do Cairns properly. Brizzy ended up being really good. I ran 2:38 there, and the big goal was to, if I can go sub 2:40 on that hilly Brisbane course, I'll be stoked. And it was probably the most fun marathon I've ever had in my life. I spent like 36 or 37 Ks running side by side with Derek and Clay Dawson. So Derek and Clay and I were like, while we were moving and while we were hurting, it was like a Sunday run. Like we were joking, we were talking the whole time. It was just such a, and like Clay Dawson, someone I've looked up to since like those first Brisbane runs where I'd be running like high, like low 250s, high 240s, and he's like flying up ahead like some kind of hero. So running with them was like a massive highlight. Went to Cairns. Cairns went well. I finished second, which was kind of the goal to podium, but I didn't run well as far as how my legs felt. So I got back from Cairns and went, oh, I'm not quite content. So I emailed the guys from Atlas and said, hey, can I switch my 10K entry in Sunny Coast and I'll do the marathon, like 4 week turnaround. So it had been like 5 weeks from Brizzy to Cairns and then 4 weeks from Brizzy to Sunny Coast. And I ran Sunny Coast differently. I was like, no, I'm instead of running conservative here like I always do, I'm just going to attack this thing from the start. And I ran the first 15K side by side with Andy Day, which is like well and truly outside my skill set. Put myself in a massive hole like I thought I would. And then just like drag myself to the finish line without disappointing myself too much and still ran a 2:36. And then my season was done. I was like, cool, feet up. I'm going to relax. I'm going to train and I'll put a good block in for this GC50 and I'll give that a crack. And I think 2 weeks after Sunny Coast, I got an email from Atlas Events saying, hey, with your places at Brisbane and your places at Sunny Coast, and the fact that they're the EVA sponsored races, and the first place guys in both events had turned down this free ticket, would you like to go and run Taipei for free pretty much? So I was like, okay, Taipei Marathon, looked at the date. Okay, that's 4 weeks away. I've got another 4 week training block. Let's go hit it again. And it coincided with school holidays starting. And you would know, like me, most people say, what do you do in your school holidays? And my answer is usually I just ran a lot. I just use it as a 2 week training camp. So I hit it harder than I've ever hit it. And for me, 120 is a big week. Like I hover around the hundreds. When we get into my training, you'll see why. But 120 is usually like a big boy week for me. And I
Oh,
think
so
I went
that 150,
120.
sorry, was that during that last holiday
That was
break?
school holidays.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was my, I did 140 and then I backed up with 150.
Yeah, I see that.
And that was like big, big Ks for me, like huge Ks. And then, yeah, when school went back, I kind of tapered down. Like I think I went like 110, like 80, 70, and then did Taipei. And then after Taipei, I had another 4 weeks to go back to GC50 again. So this year's been like not the smartest way to plan a year, but I've had a great year doing it. And like sometimes an opportunity is like going overseas for a marathon, my first one, you don't say no because it's not really going to work well. You look and go, well, I'm an age grouper. I'm way down the pecking order. I know Kipchoge wouldn't do it, but for me, not going to turn down that opportunity. So yeah, been a big year. That's all I've done this year. I've done one park run, which was Sandgate. I may have done one in January, but I did the Sandgate Speed Week, and I think I did one Road Runners something, and the rest has just been marathon, 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 ultra, which I don't want to repeat ever again. I want to next year just do some more like tens and halves and pick like one or two marathons and not get greedy because apart from a niggly Achilles, I'm not injured. I managed to get through a stupid 2024 and not break my body. So I don't want to try and do it 2 years in a row because I don't think I'd be quite so lucky to get away with it again.
Yeah, let's talk specifically about a training week then. That's a hard question for someone like you. Obviously, your Strava ebbs and flows a lot. I saw a funny meme online the other week actually that mentioned if your Strava graph looks like the Patagonia logo that like is of course quite jagged. There's a bit of a concern there, but for you, it's not really a concern. It's just the fact you've raced a lot this year. But if we were to like pick like a just a classic typical training week, and you know, are you training like a marathoner, sorry, as you head through the year, or are you training to kind of cater for all events? How does it work for you in a typical week, Maddie?
Typical week, and I'd say this year especially, it's been like marathon only. And that's something I want to change next year. Next year, I want to spend like the first 3 or 4 months and actually try to go back to some shorter stuff and try to, like they say, if you can build your speed and if you can make like 320s feel more comfortable, then your marathon pace, which is then 335s or whatever, should feel easier than it was before. I spent a lot of time this year like all in threshold, all in like that 335 to 340 range, and I got really, really good at it. But I've really neglected the other components of running. So that's a big change for next year. But generally, I suppose I probably work on a 2 week cycle because I work around my wife's schedule and work around our kids. I try to get to Bert 1 Tuesday a fortnight. In a perfect world, 1 week I'll do Bert on the Tuesday. And the next week I won't get to Bert and I can't run that afternoon because staff meetings are always Tuesday. So tend to try to build in a 13-day fortnight where I get one rest day, which is the Tuesday that I don't go to Bert. I kind of pin everything in my week around my long run and my midweek long run. Like I start there, which shows that I'm running like a marathoner. Because instead of starting my workouts, I go, okay, what's my long run going to be? What's my midweek long run on Wednesday morning going to be? And then I fill everything else in around that.
Yeah, I like that.
So usually it involves like a Friday arvo like marathon type workout. Not big MTC style stuff because I don't try to leave the house for more than an hour or 70 minutes if I can help it. Because if I get back from work, I've just come in the door, my wife's got the kids. If I put my bag down and then take off for 2 hours, like that's not a really good thing to do for the family. So I try to keep my arvo runs less than 75 minutes. My only run longer than that is my Wednesday morning because everyone's still in bed. So I try to get my midweek long run up to about 2 hours because it's not affecting anybody. Saturday, I usually try to get out for an hour, and then Sunday is my long run, and I build most things around that. So when you add up the Ks, it usually comes out to around 100. I'd say I'd average 100 Ks a week. If the long run builds up, then the Ks go up with it. If it's my down week without the Bert session in, sometimes it's a little bit less. But if I miss Bert, I try to make up for it on the Friday slightly longer. And if I do go to Bert, then maybe the Friday workout's a little bit less because I've already got one workout in my feet. So,
Right, yeah. Let's
but it's
talk
not
about
perfect.
yeah, you go, sorry.
It's not perfect though. Like the only thing that's a permanent thing is my like I've got a bunch of guys down here. Me and another guy kind of built a run club down here in Logan, called Homestead Harriers. There was a real lack of, I wouldn't say a club, but we've kind of built like a communication system where people can, engage with each other. And we have one run a week, which is the Homestead Harrier long run. We meet at the local coffee club. We meet there at 5:30, and we do it's on the doorstep of the bush, so we try to get out in the trails as much as we can. Sometimes we go roads as well. So that's like the stable part of my week that's always locked in. But that's built in like other people that run with Homestead, like they've got their own little splinter groups going everywhere. So there's a group that run at 4:15 or 4:30 every Tuesday morning. Now that's too early for me to start running, but they have that locked in. Some other guys go on a Thursday afternoon, the trails. So it's kind of opened up a community, I suppose, which I'm really proud of because there are some groups down here that are based around the park runs. Like there's the Logan River Park Runners, there's the Berrinba Park Runners, there's the Meadowbrook Park Runners, but they're all built around park run. We're the only kind of group down here that's more built around like the Sunday long run and then the community aspect of running together throughout the week whenever it works for each other. So it's really, really good. It's a really good group of people. We're all average Joes, but it makes Sunday. I just got found when I moved down here, driving into the city to do the Bert long run just became just too hard. Like it was a waste of time losing. Like Tuesday mornings it works. Going to Bert Tuesday morning is worth it because I can't get myself to that level around the parks at home by myself. But for a long run, all I really needed was some people to run with. So I just had to go and find them, and I did. So it's really good.
Exactly. Isn't a long run in a huge group just an amazing thing? Like it just makes time
Oh,
go so much quicker. Is that
yeah,
and
it's
those
so good.
conversations you have out there too with the group, is that the way that it sort of feels for you?
It does. Like even this morning, like there were on a big day, we'll have like 12 or 15 of us. Like today, we had seven, and we probably ran the first like 3 or 4K all together, and then we kind of split into what the guys at the back call the A pack and the B pack. But me and three other guys, we went off and we just kept chatting and running, and we ran like average like 4:30, low 4:30s for our 20K. Whereas the other three at the back, they wanted a more gentle run, so they slowed down and they ran like 4:50s for their 20K. And then we all meet back at coffee anyway, and we're all part of the same group and the same gang, but there's no need to all stick together because we all know our way around. And when you get to the trails, it's just the same. Like trails kind of throw a different level of unpredictability at you. So most of us know Daisy Hill like the back of our hand now. So we'll all go in together. Some of us will pick a bigger loop that gets us back in this amount of time. Some other guys will take some shortcuts to get back at this amount of time. And then yeah, again, we're all as long as we're all there at the start and we're all there at the finish, then we're running together. It doesn't mean you have to necessarily run side by side for the 90 minutes or 2 hours. It's just about that commitment to, hey, I'll be there at 5:30. I know at least five other people will. Let's get out there and do it.
Excellent. Just got me thinking too, within the week of your structure, like any sort of philosophies out there that come to mind in terms of like even little things like the threshold, do you run to heart rate or feel? And when you do your slow running, like is that super slow, a bit quicker? Anything that comes to mind in terms of recovery in the week along with the structure you just mentioned?
I suppose like the first thing would be what I touched on before is that my philosophy is definitely the most important run of the week is the long run, and the second most important run of the week
100%.
is the midweek long run. So I start with that philosophy. I don't do really slow recovery runs because I don't double. Like as I said before, with my wife, wanting to have her fitness journey, doubles aren't a thing that can occur in my life. Like if I've got morning, she's got afternoon, and vice versa. So I never have the need to do that like 5:30 like plod slow run. I will go out and just run to feel. And sometimes my runs that aren't workouts, sometimes I get out the door and they are fives. Cool, then it's fives today. Sometimes I'll get out and I'll start at fives, and by the time I finish, it's 4:30s. Okay, it's 4:30s today, but I definitely don't look at my watch for those runs. I love broken thresholds. I love, just getting out there and going, okay, well, I've got an hour or 70 minutes at the max on my Friday afternoon. I'll make sure that the first 10 to 15 minutes is cruisy, and then I'll do like, you know, 8 minutes on, 2 minutes jog, or I'll do, three on, one off times this, or I'll do 2.5K on with a 500 meter float. I really mix it up. I do try to get structured as far as planning back from a marathon and making sure the reps get longer and the recoveries get shorter. And then when you get your Sundays, I'm a big believer in the rotation of having one Sunday being time on feet, especially out in the bush. Just get out there and do 2 hours 45, do 3 hours, and just get that in the bank. And then the following week we'll head somewhere flatter, somewhere faster, and then I'll do like that marathon specific type workout with the 3x5K or the 4x4K. And try to find some friends that are keen to do that with me. But sometimes when we're all on different marathon journeys at different times, or we're not all the same pace, sometimes that looks a bit different. I've got a couple of guys. I've got Sam Dermody, who's also come along to Bird a few times now. Sam's my main buddy when it comes to doing some marathon workouts. So we'll run the first 10K with everybody, and then we'll click our watches and we'll take off and we'll do our reps, and then we'll come back and finish with everybody. So it's good when marathons line up with somebody else, but there's also plenty of times where you just say to the group, all right, headphones in, I'm off to do my workout now, and I'll see you guys at coffee when I get back. And you just go off and do it by yourself. And I think that it's actually really important to do some of those grinding workouts by yourself, because if you're always surrounded by company and you've always got someone to push you, and then you find yourself alone in a marathon and you've got to do it by yourself, and you haven't been in that mental space by yourself, then I find the marathon can be a lot more uncomfortable than it should be.
Yeah, I completely agree, mate. And a lot of learnings from that. But before we continue, let's finish, I think, with we just mentioned earlier next year, and you sort of alluded to those fives and tens. But any events locked in yet? Gold Coast sold out, Melbourne sold out. Were you in those? Have you got any
Yeah,
other
I got into
plans
Gold
around those?
Coast. Yeah, no, I set the alarm for 7, 8:55 on Monday, and I lucky I was on a planning
Schooling
day.
day.
I wasn't Yeah, I wasn't in the classroom. Luckily for me, the stars aligned and I was off the English planning. So I said to my team, full transparency, I will be beginning the work with you as soon as I get this through. So I sat there refreshing like mad every, I think I refreshed 25 or 26 times during the 13 minutes, but got it in. So that's the goal that sits there. I haven't backwards mapped yet. I've got four trail runs to do before then. I do the Southeast Queensland Trail Running Series. So they're four races done, four to go. So I've got Bunyaville in Feb. I've got Ewan Maddick, Hinsdam, and then the series finishes in my backyard in Daisy Hill, like early March. So I'll use those as some really good workouts, and I'll do a lot of stuff in the trails over summer. And then I'll probably try to hit, look, at the moment, I'm thinking I'll do the Brisbane 10K. I'll probably decide closer to the date that I want to do the marathon instead, which would be a bad idea, but I'll probably decide to, but I'll try not to. Look, honestly, at the moment, it's like Gold Coast is locked in. I've got to do some fast stuff. I've got to do some trail stuff and get strong. And I'll find some five and tens to do along the way. Nothing locked in yet, though, buddy. Nothing, and which is scary these days, because if you don't lock it in now, you're probably not going to be doing anything.
Yeah. Well, if you've enjoyed listening to Matty today, jump on his Instagram. I reckon he deserves a thousand more followers just with his experience.
Yeah.
And there's always a story behind every run he does. If you jump on the recent GC50, there's a story there. There's a story from the Taipei run, I think, as well, and many, many others. As he mentioned earlier, been around from 2010 to now. So if you think
Yep.
you've been out there for a while, well, maybe think again and tune in even further on Instagram or wherever ever that may be for Maddie Strava as well, obviously these days. And yeah, thanks for your time, mate. We have learnt a lot, but I'm going to finish with one lucky listener question as well. You ready to go?
Who have
Yeah,
we
no, it's
got?
Nathaniel Wells, fellow
Hey, Dr.
Burt Squadron.
Swimmer.
He
What's
asked, can
Nathaniel?
you run
You've been coaching.
faster than 3:40 pace, Maddie?
You say, can I run fast in 340 pace?
Yeah.
I can. I don't do enough of it though. Is that a real question, Nathaniel? No, and that alludes to what I'm saying about next year, is that I've spent a lot of time in that very comfortable 340 pace, and it is there's a purpose to it. Like if that's where, if my goal marathon pace for this year was 335s, which would have given me like a PB. And I find it hard to hit that exact pace running around the streets of Logan. But if I feel if I'm running 340s, give race day adrenaline, give like crowds around, that'll be 335s. But I've got very comfortable with that. And I was only saying to Sam and the guys this morning, that I need to change my philosophy, as you would say, for next year. And get along to Bert and work that faster stuff. I can run a K in like 310. I could probably go quicker, but I can't do many of them.
Surely.
Once lactic hits me, I'm real bad. That's just why I like the hard stuff, the long stuff, because I feel like I can talk myself out of pain when it's like a mental barrier, but I can't talk my legs out of lactic. Once that happens, I find in a 5K race, I can go like 312, 312, 316, and then I'm cooked and there's no turning it around. So.
I'll keep going at it, mate. Those are marathons and half marathons, probably more so the marathon and ultra running is beckoning in the next few years, along with those fives and tens that you plan to run. But yeah, thanks again for your time. I didn't ask, was this your first ever podcast
Could you not tell? It's been like I
that
joked in the background before when we have one of our many technical difficulties that if listeners have listened to your
you've
podcast before, they'll probably find this one's very much like Pulp Fiction Tarantino inspired because it has not been chronological. I've jumped wherever my brain has gone, and that is without a beer. So
on?
God help me if I had a beer. Most of the stories wouldn't have made any sense at all. I just find synapses fire and one story in my head links to another, and it may not have even answered the question you asked in the first place. So hopefully people have a good laugh at listening to me have a ramble
Oh,
for
I'd have to disagree, mate. That teacher talk has come out, and I've loved it. Listeners will love it. The stories and the experience there, so much to get out of that. So, thank you again, and yeah, I hope you enjoyed your first podcasting experience as a guest. I know you're an avid listener to many of them. You might have to give
Yes.
yourself a listen back this afternoon.
How does that go? I don't know about that. I might get my wife to instead for me and give me an honest rating. So, all right, mate. Love your
Cheers,
work.
mate.
Thanks,
See
Pete.
ya. Likewise.
See you later.
Catch ya.